But with Bitcoin, people tend to come from the nerdy side, or if they're not nerdy, they have heard about this from nerds and you don't quite understand it. It's too good to be true, maybe. And what is those, like, you cannot see them, you cannot touch them, what is it? And that makes people question it, and when you're questioning it, you want to gain comfort by understanding. And some of this shit is just too hard to understand. After you've broken this down, so I just understand 50% of it, my next question is, can we do like this and that, which is really stupid and dumb, but it would be without losing any trust and any security and entropy, and then we try to figure out how to do this, so everyone can do it, and they don't have to question it.
This is the Blue Collar Bitcoin Podcast, a show where average Joe firefighters explore the most important monetary technology of the 21st century. We talk Bitcoin, we talk finance, and we talk shit.
In this interview, I sit down with Dax and E from Seedhammer. These two savages have created one of the best devices I have heard of for protecting your seed phrases on Steel. The Seedhammer is an off-the-shelf metal engraving machine that Seedhammer has modified to stamp multi-sig plates that include the wallet configuration file. This is a big deal. This allows you to depend only on the Steel plates for complete multi-sig backup. No paper, no SD cards. In this discussion, we talk about multi-sig, why the wallet configuration file is so vitally important, and we discuss the future of multi-sig implementations that are on the horizon. If you are serious about protecting your Bitcoin, this episode is a must listen. Your first priority when setting up any kind of self-custody is a trustworthy hardware wallet. We use Cold Cards. Cold Card offers the best security possible in a signing device. You can use a Cold Card in a single SIG setup, and you can use it for a self-sovereign multi-SIG. The combination of Seedhammer plates and Cold Cards for a multi-SIG setup is institutional-grade security. This is the best of the best, and it's our current go-to solution for generational wealth. Protect your Bitcoin as if it's worth 10 times the current price, because it very likely will be. Dax, E, thanks for joining me here, man. How are you guys?
Thank you. Great.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. You know, I've been down this rabbit hole of 3D printing for like 3.5 to 4 years. I have a Prusa from the Czech Republic. Love this printer. It's great. Problem is that there's a newer version, or they're not a newer version of it, but a competitor out of China now called Bamboo Labs, which is murdering them. It's like twice as fast. It is more accurate. The one downside, so I'm researching this thing because a couple of guys I work with bought them and they're pretty badass. They run a server farm in China. So in order to send a file to your 3D printer from your computer on your Wi-Fi network, that file first goes to China's server farm, where then it's then relayed to your 3D printer that's in the next room. I don't think I need to talk to you guys about the kind of privacy concerns that could be conjured up out of that, but it does bring to mind a whole bunch of different things. Like, what if there's any government regulation about what you can and you cannot 3D print? I can guarantee you one of the first things that's going to happen is you're just going to say, it's going to say, nope, you can't print that because it has the resemblance of a gun or something, or we can't allow you to print your fleshlight parts today because, that's not allowed in your country. Man. It's just crazy how much the insidiousness of this privacy creep has moved into everything in our lives. Your phone is listening. It's got a camera. Your 3D printer is listening. Probably it's got a camera. Everything's being vetted through a Chinese server farm before it goes to your printer. It's absolutely wild. And it's hard to, like, where does this all go? Where do you get, at this point, like, you can't even buy a 3D printer that doesn't leak your privacy information to the entire world.
Where does it end? I don't know. That, I guess that's the reason we're using hardware wallets. We're going, instead of trying to secure your devices, you're trying to have what's important on as small devices as possible.
Right, and simplify these devices as much as possible.
I assume, yeah, because most of what you, at least for my sake, most of what I do is not that important that it doesn't get leaked, but there's a very few, as you would know as a Bitcoiner, there's very few things, but there's a few very important things that must not be leaked, and those things can be isolated as far as I can tell practically and legally today with hardware wallet devices and so on.
Also, when you tell this story, it reminds me of all the Chinese produced security cameras. from different Chinese vendors. It's all the same shit inside. And the offer, back in the days, you put an SD card into the local unit and it would record to that SD card. But nowadays, they offer cloud services. So if you're actually monitoring yourself and giving everything away about your private life, also when you believe it's not recording, right? It's still pointing. It still has power. And who knows where it goes?
Your TV does too. Everything. Almost everything electronic is sucking up your data and sending it to somebody, you know, the highest bidder, most likely. It is really wild, but that does bring us to the subject of the day, which is protecting and self-custodying your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So when we talk about these things, and I think it's important to remember that some of our listenership is new. This bull market is bringing in a lot of new people. So a lot of people might not even understand what it is that multi-signature is on its face. Why don't we just start there? That way we can kind of build toward what it is you guys are building and why it matters so much. So if you guys had to describe what multi-signature Bitcoin custody is, just simplify it, make it super basic, and we'll kind of take it from there.
Some people may have experience with bank accounts where most bank accounts just have one authority. You have your personal bank account and you personally can ask the bank to move the funds from that bank account. But once you get to a business arrangement, what you usually do is you have your business account or accounts and you make it so, and or at least some businesses make it so that two people in the company needs to authorize any transaction. So there's less chance of embezzlement and mistakes and so on. So usually one will do the, we create the transactions and queue them up at the bank, and some other person, let's say the CFO or something, company, will do the sign off. And you will have, in a way, you have two authorized persons saying, this is a good, these transactions are good, let's execute them. And the same thing happens with multisig. It's pretty much asking the Bitcoin, it's saying these addresses need to have a certain amount of signatures before funds or UTXOs can be moved from this address. And it's the same thing. You can specify how many, and instead of persons in Bitcoin, you have keys. So you say these are the authorized keys for this address or these UTXOs, and you specify for each of those addresses how many of these keys needs to sign before the transaction is valid. And that's pretty much, I think that's a good analogy because it's very similar to what you do with in banks.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also you have, if you're using it for just yourself, you have the ability to spread those keys across a couple of different devices in case one device fails, you have a backup. So a good rule of thumb, a lot of people would use a 2 of 3 multisig, which means that two devices are needed to sign a transaction, any two of those three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if one fails or you lose one, you still have a backup and it covers your ass from device failure or just plain old losing your device.
But there is one downside with all this multisig, because from single sig, which is the technical term for when you have 12 or 24 words in an ordinary Bitcoin address, that's a single sig address because you need one single signature. With multisig, if you lose your setup, if you lose the phone or the laptop where you have your wallet, which is also called a coordinator software because it coordinates everything, then in order to not sign but restore your wallet from scratch, you need the public keys from all the signers. In this case, in a 2 out of 3, you would need the 3 public keys. And the way that has been solved is that you combine them with other information in something called a descriptor, which describes your wallet. Makes good sense, right? But what if you lose your descriptor? We just talked about surveillance. What if you put it in the cloud and you are locked out of your cloud service? What if you had put it together with each share, which is normal when you back up your stuff, or if you have like a cone card, a Trezor, a Ledger, something like that, God forbid it. And you put those 3 different places with a paper copy of your descriptor. And then those papers kind of, like, say, vanish through water damage or something that happens to them. Yeah, fire.
Yeah.
Then you have a very big problem because you just lost all your coins.
Yeah. I want to just before you keep going, a simple analogy for this is if you have, let's say you have the wallet configuration mm-hmm. file, the descriptor, mm-hmm. as you said, and you have two of those seed phrases. Say you've saved, you had two of those on Steel backups, you had mm-hmm. a fire, but you've got the wallet descriptor and you've got two of those. So what the description is, or the wallet descriptor in a simple analogy, is like the map. It's like the map to the safe, right? And then the seed phrase or the seed words themselves are the keys to the vault. So you need two of those out of three keys, and you need the map to get to the yes. treasure. If you don't have the map, you're mm-hmm. fucked. If you don't have the keys,
at
you're
least
fucked.
The threshold of keys.
You need both yeah. of them. Exactly. So that's why it's very important for people when they start getting into playing around with multi-signature wallets that they understand that wallet description file is extremely important.
Yes.
Go on.
Yeah, but that's exactly the issue. And even we misunderstood that in the beginning, years back, how important it is.
That confused me to no end for a while. I had a really hard time understanding this for I mean, not for a long time, but it took a minute to, because when you understand single sig, you get it. It's just my 24 words. It's all I need. Very simple. This introduces a mm-hmm. bit more complexity.
Mm-hmm. And why is it you only need your 24 words or 12 words? It's because that's your private key. And your public key is derived from that. So it is, in essence, enough to have your 12 or 24 words, because built in from there or derived from there, any wallet can get the public key. But when you don't have access to one of your shares, how will you get the public key from that share that is derived? That is through your coordinator software, like Sparrow Wallet, for instance, pulled out and saved in the descriptor, the map, as you call it. So, and that was our issue in the beginning. Like, how can we solve this somehow so that people that want to use multisig, which already is harder to set up, and you need to make three seeds, and you need to make them with high entropy, which is even more, like, actually low entropy is also a very big thing that you need to consider. How do you make high enough entropy, high enough randomness? When you crack that nut, so you also need to derive in a safe way your public keys from those three seeds you made. And if you made them offline, which I would recommend, you need some kind of electronic device that gets those 12 or 24 words so it can derive the pub key, because the pub key is the only thing you want to give to an internet-connected device like your laptop with Sparrow Wallet or your phone with Blue Wallet or whatever coordinator software you use. You never want to give those applications that are online anything that reminds you of your 12 or 24 words. Nothing. So when right. you have derived those public keys that you safely and securely can provide to the software, then the software will configure the wallet and make it into a multisig. And already here, when you reach this point, you have like sweat on your hands, right? On your forehead, because already here is quite scary. And that's why it's so important to make test transactions with small amounts and yada, yada, yada. And then the
right. I think it's really important yeah. too, to just, you know, download Sparrow, create a whole bunch of multi-sig wallets, play with them, send $10 to them, whatever, small amount of Bitcoin. Just get used to going through those motions to get that, so you're more confident that you understand how to use it. Because with confidence, but I mean, not overconfidence where you just send your whole stack without testing anything, but you should have a very good handle on how things work before yeah. you start sending a significant amount of money there. And you should be able to erase it, reinstate it on each of your hardware wallets mm-hmm. as well. And then I would say you're probably good to go yep. as far as sending a sizable amount.
Yeah, the greatest test, yep. Sorry to disturb you, the greatest test is to delete your Sparrow wallet, delete your configuration file, only have your three backups made with CTamer, of course, and then see if you can back it up on a totally like empty installation or fresh installation.
Right, right, right. So there's a bunch of different methods that people have used for backing up these. And so when people keep these seed phrases, they want to put them on something substantial, something that will last in the case of a flood, in the case of fire, in the case of a natural disaster, or just, you know, something that will withstand mm-hmm. time and a lot of stress yeah. on it. So, but generally people use steel. There's jigs that you can buy. I've tried this. This is a pretty good method. You 3D print a little jig. that you put stainless steel washers in, and then you just use a stamp set and you stamp your seeds into it. It takes a while, and especially if you're going to do a multi-sig setup that includes, you know, close to 100 words, 75 or so words, it's going to take you a long time. And you're always prone to errors. And it's a pain in the ass because you have to reach for, or you have to find the, you know, the letter you need. And you have to dig through this pile of a whole bunch of these things. It feels like it takes 10 minutes for each one for me, but it ends up taking a long time and being a lot of effort to
and
do.
You are afraid of making a mistake.
Right. And it's almost inevitable that you do. Or there's other ones where you stamp into a grid. That's pretty easy to make a mistake on those, in my experience, because you're looking down a grid in two directions. It's very easy. We're very fallible as humans. It's easy to just fuck up. And now what are you going to do? Scratch it out? And then you're going to go back and do it again. Like, that's just, you're going to start all over.
Yeah. This is how seed hammers actually started. We were fucking around with these plates and hammering, stamping.
Yep. I've been there too.
Yeah, letters and so on. That's how it started, actually. So it's very relatable
of
what you're
making describing. An upright mistake. You're also feeling that it's very tedious and it's not very like there's no big pleasure in hammering steel into steel.
Right. It annoys your wife. She hears hammering for like 3 hours straight. Yeah. She's like, "What the fuck are you doing in the basement?"
Yeah. And it's so unpleasant for your hands. And but it is, of course, a totally offline method. And that's the good thing about that. Let's not scold all those solutions. It's brilliant. If you have 12 words and that's the only thing you're going to secure, I would definitely do it like that. The issue is if you have more than 12 words and you're going to do it several times because you have 3 or 5 seats and you also do it for your spouse or whatever, helping your family out. When you're done with all that hammering, you're standing with all those seats hammered on plates and you need to name them correctly. But there are no hard, let's say, steel backup of your descriptor. You haven't even reached that point yet.
Yes.
So as he said, this started exactly with this experience as you are envisioning here. But also, when we did that, and then, now we need to go to the pub keys. Not even the descriptor, just the raw pub keys, because that is actually enough. Well, he did it as a test. He tried it out, and I don't know how many days it took and how cumbersome, and of course he made mistakes. And how do you delete a wrong letter? This is not just 4 letters that can
start
be
over.
Part of a word. This is like X pop, yada yada yada, random things.
Yeah, and X pops have uppercase and lowercase letters as well.
How many? I don't know. I've never counted it or known, but how many letters is that roughly that you're trying to hammer out?
I think it's 100, 120.
Sure.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Upper, lowercase, digits. Per pop key, yeah, of course.
Forget it. Just forget it, Joss. Forget doing it on Steagle.
No, it would suck. It would be miserable. So the alternative to that is then either A, you print out a QR code with the pub, with, you know, the wallet descriptor file. You could keep that. But the problem with that is, again, back to why are you doing this? Because you want to have a backup that you can depend on. And can you depend on a piece of paper through the kinds of things we described, which is, you know, fire, water damage, any of that. Plus the piece of paper is very easy to lose. Someone can find it, whatever. That's not a way to depend in the long term, into perpetuity, that somebody 20 to 30 years from now is going to find this thing and understand, you know, that it goes with those seed words and vice versa. So what you guys have done, which I think is the real reason to consider using a seed hammer for saving these things, is not only is it a pain in the ass to save those seed words, but it's massively worse to have to hammer a descriptor file out. So maybe you guys want to go into the describing exactly what the seed hammer does with that descriptor file on the back of the plate to make this whole thing seamless and completely constructed in those 3 plates.
So in layman terms, the seed hammer is an engraving machine that is controlled by software, open source software that we built that can run on a Raspberry Pi Zero, same hardware stack as the seed signer. As there is not one line of code that has something to do yeah, that are in common with Seedhammer, SeedSigner. But the hardware stack was really good. We were through different hardware until we chose this one. Anyways, it's running on this open source software, and you present your descriptor for the software, and you present your seeds for the software. And this is a little air-gapped device. It cannot communicate with anything, but there is a USB plug in it, and you connect it to this stupid industrial engraving machine that we found, an off-the-shelf machine that you can buy in some hardware stores, etc., etc. There's also an air-gapped machine. It has no memory, but it can talk and get instructions from our software from this Raspberry Pi Zero. And now when the software knows the descriptor and the keys, it has every information to kind of, let's say this in layman terms, print out. See, there's a steel printer that just prints out your shares. So it prints out the 3x12 or 3x24 words. And because it's a machine, we could just as well put a QR code next to those words representing exactly the same data, which makes it even easier to load your seed if you have a hardware wallet with a camera. And on the back side of these metal plates, we place the descriptor. So I have an example here of 24 words, plate 1 of 3. And on the back side, all this that is impossible to hammer is now hammered. It doesn't look like a normal descriptor, though. If you look how your descriptor looks like in Sparrow Wallet or any other wallet that can show your descriptor, because we also sharded it, and that's really East Table. But before he goes into that part, I just want to show them. And any 2 out of 3 seeds is enough to sign a transaction. But the most brilliant thing here is that any 2 out of 3 plates are also enough to reconstruct your full descriptor, because this is not the full descriptor. We couldn't we couldn't place a full descriptor on one plate.
Yep. That is, after I was done with it, I'm glad you brought examples, because I'm not showing anyone mine. It's so elegant the way it's done. It's beautiful. I'm actually like, I don't want to stack these on top of each other before I find where I'm going to put them, because I don't want to scratch them up, but they do look really good. Real good.
Do you want to tell a little bit about what's happening here? Because I actually can't explain it on the backside.
Yeah, if you think your readers, your listeners are interested.
I'm curious. I mean, let's not go super long on it, but if you can simplify it for like 5 minutes or less, and we can kind of have some understanding of how that works.
So the backside. Yeah, so as Dex mentioned, you can't fit 2 or 3 or more on the backside of just one plate. And the reason is the same as we discussed in the beginning, is that for a multisig descriptor, at least the multisig we are all using today, is that you have to include in the descriptor all the keys, all the participating keys. So for 2 or 3, that's 3 keys, and you can't fit that on the backside. So what we did is that we sort of abused and you've probably seen the animated. When you ask, for example, Sparrow or Blue Water to show you the descriptor or export wallet mm-hmm. configuration, you see an animated right. QR code. And the reason you see an animated QR code is the same as our problem, which is that you can't really do one big QR code with the whole descriptor in it, because that would be way too difficult to scan, or even couldn't fit in in the biggest, largest QR code. So what they do is there's a standard. There are actually 2 competing standards now, but there's one standard, the UR format, where you can chop up data in several QR codes and then show them in sort of an animated movie kind of thing. We took that and just took out 3 particular frames of that animating QR codes and put them on the backside. And the cool thing is that for 2 or 3, what you do is that you can, because we need to have it so that any 2 plates can recover the full descriptor, which means almost by definition that you need every plate to have half of the descriptor. And how do you fit half of the descriptor on all the plates? Well, you can put, let's say you have 2 halves, A and B, you can put half A on the first plate, and you can put half B on the second plate. But then the question is, what can you put on the third one?
Right.
If you put part A, you can end up with 2 parts A and no B, and the same thing with if you put right. part B. So what you can do with this standard is that you can put an XOR of these two halves on the third one. And what is an XOR? An XOR behaves a little bit like multiplication. So if you say each descriptor half is a number, let's say part A is 2 and part B is 3, what we put on the third plate is the number 6. And if you think of multiplication and division, you can say even if you have 2 and 3, then you have two halves. If you have 2 and 6, you can take the number 6 and divide 2 in it, up into it, and get 3. And if you have 3 and 6, you can take the 6 and divide 3 with it and get the 2. And so it's not exactly the same, but the XOR operator behaves like that. So with the third plate, itself is nothing. It's completely unreadable, but you can take one of the other plates and sort of divide that plate out of the XOR parts and get the part you're missing.
That's a great description.
So that's what we are doing on the backside.
Yeah, a great way to simplify that, because it makes it really reachable for a lot of people, I think. Then just basically it's derived, even though it's a derivative of the other two, but with either one of those, you can use math to figure out what that other would be. Cool.
Yes.
That is ingenious.
Yeah, it works.
And the cool thing, or the extra cool thing, is that it's part of the standard. So it's not like you need some CTamer-specific scanner to assemble the two parts into one descriptor. It actually works, if you show it to Sparrow or Blue Wallet, it works as if Sparrow saw, or Blue Wallet saw, a very slow animating movie with QR codes.
Okay.
So it's, there's part A. Oh, there's part A, X, or B. Well, then I have the whole thing. So that's the cherry on top, that you don't need specialized software to recover.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I have a couple of questions for you guys that are a little off this topic, but still tangentially related. So I'm wondering if, like, let's say I have a cold card. I have already set that up. It's got a seed. It's got what's called BIP85 to create like daughter seeds from the original. Would there be any problem with saying, I don't want to have to create more entropy because I've already created entropy for this specific device? Can I use BIP85 to create three daughter, I don't know if that's even the correct term, but basically daughter seeds, and then use those to create multiple devices to then use, a seed hammer to create a multi-sig? Is there any issue with that as far as security?
Well, that depends on what you're protecting against. So if you just want to have your single seed sorted, so to speak, split out in three parts and have them distributed and then only needing two parts to recover it, I think that's a good solution to use it. But if you, I think we talked about this earlier in this interview, is that if you want several devices from different vendors, say a cold card and a treasure or something, then it's obviously not a good idea, because the cold card has generated all these three
Doris seeds. So the entropy, assuming the entropy being produced on that thing is good, theoretically it's fine, but because you want to split up the vendors just in case there's some kind of an attack vector you're not aware of within that device, it's better to have split it up.
It depends on you, because it's more difficult to use different vendors and it's a more difficult recovery instructions and so on. So it depends on people's level of paranoia. But if you do want to use multisig, among other things, to spread out your risk among different hardware vendors, then absolutely you should generate separate entropy, separate seeds on different devices. And there's another reason, which is that generating entropy itself can also be, at least in theory, backdoored from the device's side without you knowing. So that's a whole other discussion. But you should also clarify to yourself whether you want a device to generate the seed for you, or you want to do it in a manual.
Right.
And that's, of course, that's a different discussion. But you can guard a little bit against, let's say, the one device. I wouldn't say any device, because it hasn't happened yet, but it could happen to any of these devices. So if you generate then your seeds on different devices, let's say one seed on a cold card, one seed on a treasure, and one seed on a seed sign or something, then you're, even if one of these devices somehow has backdoored your seed generation, then they can't run away with your money. Well, with your Bitcoin.
That's another topic altogether. Like, people, I think especially people that are new to this, that are just trying to basically understand it, I think your level of paranoia can be a problem, because you can create situations where you get yourself in so deep beyond your own depth that you can, you know, create some kind of obfuscated situation where you actually fuck yourself and lose your money because, like you use a passphrase and then you forget that word. And just for people listening that don't know, like you can add a 25th word to a seed phrase. That word is not on your device. That word is only existing in your own head, or if you write it down and save it. But if you forget that word, your Bitcoin's effectively gone because your device won't be able to find it. So it's as important as it is to be paranoid. And the more you understand about this, I think the more paranoid you get. I can't imagine the amount of paranoia you must have, E. Honestly, because the deeper down the rabbit hole you go, the more you realize that there really is no safety in anything because you have to trust at some point. Like, I'm not a programmer. I have to trust that somebody knew what they were doing and they weren't nefarious at some level. Otherwise, you know, and you're probably not reading binary, right? E, like there's some level where we're all kind of obfuscated.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, but again, I would say there are some practical things you can do. For example, using two or three hardware devices from different vendors is a very practical, I would almost call it low level practical way of sidestepping. You can't avoid it completely, but you can very much sidestep it because the risk of one device being backdoored is very, very low, and the risk of two being backdoored in a way that can, that they cooperate is extremely low.
Yeah.
So it's these kind of small, I would say, tricks that can severely limit the risk you're putting yourself
into.
Yeah,
that's actually a good tangent that I want to pull on that string a little bit. So if you were giving advice to somebody who is kind of intimidated by all of this, you just said three different devices for a multisig. That's a pretty obvious one. What is some other really good basic advice that you'd give people to protect themselves to the maximal to the maximum extent without kind of going in too deep? Like basically getting the Pareto's law of storing your Bitcoin, where 80% of the way for the average person, the last 20% is generally like such, you know, such tough fruit to reach that it isn't really worth it unless you have some real serious chops.
What is this person is? It depends on the capability of this.
Let's just say that they're,
because multisig in itself.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No. So for example, multisig is not a simple thing. It could be quite advanced for people just, you know, struggling with just understanding the basics of Bitcoin, single sig, how addresses work, keys work, and seed works. So it depends on, I would say, if you're starting out, I would probably suggest that people started out with a lower amount, as you said. One of you two said that test it out with low amounts, try to buy some Bitcoin, back it up to a single sig something, get familiar with it.
Right. Get it off exchanges, number
because
one.
Because stepping from nothing. Yeah, get it off exchanges, number one. That is a good, very good first exercise. And then just use a single sig, I would say, if you're very new. That's why I ask, what level are you on? Because you really need to be comfortable with it before you can do these kinds of things. Because if you do it just from, you know, reading instructions off the internet or something, there's still, with the usability of the current devices and software and so on, there are still some pitfalls. It's not like you will necessarily lose anything with a very high risk, but there is a few pitfalls and risks and so on. So yeah, that would probably be maybe a little bit boring advice.
That's good.
Use a single sig for the beginner, so to speak, and then when you get more Bitcoin or get more familiar with it, then try to research a bit about multisig, whether that's something for you. And even single sig, you mentioned that the risk of having, for example, multisig, if you have two or three, then you can lose one of these parts and then still be able to recover. But you can do sort of the same thing if you have a single sig. You can just take the two, you can make two backups of your single seed phrase, and put those two in different places. And then you have some kind of redundancy.
Right. That's good practical advice. Okay. All right. So we want to talk a little bit more about the future of multisig here. And there are some things on the horizon that Taproot has enabled. And I think we'll let you guys take the rein on this because I have some cursory understanding of these things, but interesting. So Frost, let's start there. This is, it's an M of N multi-sig that appears like a single sig on chain, better privacy, offloads complexity off chain. So give us a little bit, flesh that out for me a little bit. I have no clue what Frost is. I just read that.
He will take care of the technical part, but in layman terms, you can say that Frost exactly is what you said. It's a way to have a multi-sig wallet that on-chain, for everyone else, looks like a single sig. Right. That means you have lower fees, because you don't need, like it's like a single sig, so there are lower fees. And when you look at the transaction on the blockchain, there's kind of more privacy, because you cannot see that it's part of a multi-sig. So it also adds some privacy to it. Mm-hmm. So that's like when E explained it to me, that was what I got out of it. It's kind of a multi-sig that on-chain acts and looks and behaves like a single sig.
Okay. So I guess my first question, and the first question a lot of people probably have, is so how does this interact with Bitcoin? So it sounds like a lot of things are going on behind off the blockchain, right? So how is that happening? And then how is that kind of bridging the gap onto Bitcoin in a trustless way?
So what happens is that you do more setup. Today, when you do a multi-sig setup, you sort of take out the XPubs, the public part of your seed for each of your participating seeds, and you give that to a coordinator, and that combines it into a single descriptor. But it still contains, let's take a 203, it still contains 3 XPubs. And that's why the descriptor is larger, that's why your addresses are longer, and so on. With Music and Frost, what you can do is that you use some mathematical operations, so you can take these public keys and combine them into one. So you can, and that's what Taproot or Snore signatures enable you to do, at least at the easy level. You can do it with the without Snore and Taproot and so on, but it's much more difficult to do. So what that unlocked is that you can more or less easily make these combined or aggregate public keys that contain several public keys into it. And mathematically, that's reasonably easy to do. What's very difficult to do is to make sure that the resulting aggregated key only contains your public keys, right? So again, let's say you have a call card tracer and a seed signer, and one of these wants to, when you set up your Frost wallet, and you will end up with an aggregate public key, you can't just look into Sparrow and see, well, it contains only these 3 keys. So one of these devices, again, I'm not saying that they are doing it, but they could, if you're not careful, they can smuggle in several other public keys so that you end up with not a 203, but a 205, where the 2 remaining keys are under control by someone else. And you can't really know that. You can't really detect that. So my point with this is that you spend a lot of more careful, you do more careful protocol when you set up the wallet to ensure that the aggregate public key contains only your keys in a secure way. And that's mostly what Frost is about. It's actually about setting up this aggregate key in a secure way. But once you have this aggregate key, then from that point on, from the Bitcoin network's perspective, it acts and sounds and walks like a
single. So is it the coordinator software, like the tool that's its like responsibility to help you not getting cheated by the system?
It's actually the responsibility of each of the devices. So you have multiple communication rounds, where each of these devices first commit to their public key, send it to the coordinator, then the coordinator sends it out to each of the devices again, and they verify that the public keys actually contains only their key and so on. It's the coordinator's job, but mostly it's the individual devices. For example, if you have several people with each of these devices, each of the participants in this multiple sig needs to know that it was set up correctly. So it's actually more the device's responsibility. Okay. Whereas the coordinator just acts as a coordinator.
Just, Frost is not widespread. Is it even out yet? I don't even know that. Like used by anyone.
It's out in the sense that it's working, apparently, at least. But I'm not aware of any... I'm not aware of any wallet actually using it.
Yeah, it sounds pretty experimental so far from what I was reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and there's also the standardization problem. For example, as far as I know, there are no way of expressing a Frost wallet in a descriptor. And that's a very low-level, very pedestrian problem. But it is a problem, for example, for us or for other backup solutions. How do you even represent something if you have a Frost wallet? So it's, again, yeah, at this point, it's very...
So it sounds like most of the benefits of this are going to be primarily efficiency and privacy. Is that a correct take on that?
Yes. Yeah. For us, the reason we're very excited about it, even though it's more complicated, is first and foremost, we're not doing all this setup and coordinating and signing and so on. That's the heavy lifting is done by, will be done by the devices and your coordinators and so on. So we're only backing up. The reason we're, so that's one almost frivolous reason. The other more important reason is that it also behaves as a single sig for us, which means that we, you can back up a multi-sig Frost with any M of N and only take up as much space as if it were single sig. So you can have it so each of your plates have the complete descriptor on the backside instead of having parts set up. One has one part and the other has the other part and the third has this combination. And you can support any kinds of setup. You can do 5 of 10 or 2 of 5 or whatever setup you want. So it you gain a lot more flexibility and still be able to back it up.
Oh, so something like that. I guess I misunderstood the reason for the split on the back of the plates. Is the reason just the fact that we don't have enough space on there? Or is it...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, because I was thinking when it was split 2 of 3, I thought that was more of a security idea. So that if you would need to have more than one plate to actually peep on the wallet.
No. That, I think that's a common misunderstanding. As far as I haven't actually done this experiment, but if you can gain access to one XPub from one seed, I'm pretty sure you can scan the UTXOs for multi-sig addresses that contains this XPub.
Well, I mean, it doesn't make much difference because in the other setup where you have an SD card in there, you're going to be able to get everything. At least see everything. So it's not like you're losing anything. Yeah. But that was my first thought when it was split up like that, is that this is for privacy.
Yes. And again, it's just like something that came out of the way we had to do in order to compress it. And I think it's important to go back to what we talked about earlier, that keep it simple. Mm-hmm. If you also want to encrypt your descriptor, I understand the reason, but it is, at the end of the day, quote-unquote, just a privacy issue. It's not a security issue. And don't make things harder for yourselves. If you anyways have your wallet loaded into, let's say, Blue Wallet, and you're not running on your own node, you are, again, exposing your balance and your addresses anyways to someone somewhere, right? So that someone finds a plate with 12 or 24 words and you just know a little bit about Bitcoin, I don't think you reveal much that you give them, like, yeah, they can then see it's a part of a multi-sig.
Yeah. So do any of these new protocols that are being worked on here, whether it be Frost, MuSig 2, do any of these have promise to make multi-sig a bit easier and simpler for the average person, or is that more on the UX side that you see that being solved?
I'm excited, or we're excited, I think, about Codex 32. MuSig is a sort of a special case for us because that's an N of N. So it behaves a bit like Frost, but it's a bit simpler, but you can only do N of N. So 2 of 2, 3 of 3, 4 of 4. So it's not as, I would say, as relevant for the use cases that CTrammer, I think, is mostly used for. So that's mostly Frost or Codex 32. The reason we have... Codex 32 is a different representation of your seed or your master key. Instead of bit 39, which are the word list you're familiar with, where you have 12 or 24 words selected out of list of 2048 words. Codex 32 looks a bit like a Bitcoin address, you know, the SegWit one starting with BC1 and lowercase q and then a lot of digits and letters. And it's the same kind of representation that you can take your master seed and you can represent it in sort of the same way. And that's Codex 32. The cool thing about Codex 32 is that you can, it's much easier to generate by hand, which I'm very much a proponent for. And it's also, and that's very, that's key here, it also enables or it has built-in instructions for doing Shamir's secret sharing of your seed. And Shamir, I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I have used it, yeah.
Yeah. So the reason that's not more widespread, because it's in many ways simpler than multisig, much more simple. But the reason it's a very pedestrian reason that it's not more widespread, and that is there's no standard way of doing Shamir's secret sharing of the seed. And Codex 32 is, as far as I can tell, there's also Slip 39 from Trezor, but that hasn't also... It also hasn't really gained widespread use. But the cool thing about Shamir's secret sharing is that you literally split up a single sig. So what you have is a single sig, right, and that's it. Your wallet is single sig. You have one seed, or in Codex 32, you have one secret, but you can split it up in any split up as you would for a multisig. It could be two or three. It could be three or five. It could be five, 10, or anything. And you only need to save, to store, or backup those shares.
Right.
You don't need the descriptor. You can print the description on the backside if you want to, and you can of course have it conveniently loaded in your wallet, but it's not necessary. And the reason it isn't is that Shamir's secret sharing is something where you can take anything and split up in multiple parts. And if you have enough parts, let's say two out of three parts, you can take those two parts and combine it into the original secret. And the original secret is your seed. So it doesn't need the descriptor. It is much more like single sig, because it is a single sig. It's just split up like a treasury map or a
pipe. Right. What is the reason that Shamir has, is it just because it doesn't have a standard that people kind of shy away from using it? There's got to be some other downside that multi-sig is superior to it.
There is at least.
Yes. Yes. You can't share it. There's no standard. And then probably the same reason that it doesn't have a standard. You can't use multiple devices.
Right. Exactly.
If you need to combine...
You only have one device, or I mean, I guess you could argue, but this wouldn't be as secure. You could have multiple devices with the same seed as a backup device, but then you have a whole secret that could potentially get compromised,
whole,
right?
If I'm allowed to jump in, the whole idea is that, like, from my perspective, I'm the non-technical guy. I just know it feels really good to use multisig, because when I load a seed into a seed signer or a jade or whatever I'm using, or I have a stateful signer, I know that this, even though that electronic device wanted to cheat me, it can't, because it doesn't know the other shares in the multisig setup.
I see. Yeah, so that's the multi-vendor side.
Multi-vendor, it doesn't even have to be multi-vendor, it's just that the idea that any signing device in a multisig does not know the other device's private keys. So it cannot cheat you, that single device at least. Mm-hmm. There are ways, of course, to hack a multisig, but let's just keep it simple. When you have a single sig that is split up with Shamir's shared secret, which, as he says, can split any secret up, now we're just splitting up a single sig, that's really nice for storing your seed, because if you lose some of the parts, as long as you have the threshold, you can recreate your single sig. But when you recreate your single sig, because it's a single sig, you're going to do it on one device. You're going to travel around to your locations and load parts of this Shamir shared secret in until the device has the full private key. And now one device has access to all of your coins.
Yep, because it's a single sig. That makes total sense.
And that's like what I personally kind of makes me a little bit scared. If someone has a life-changing amount stored on single sig, even though it is split with Shamir's shared secret, it's still single sig. One single point of failure, and one person, if you have a low entropy, can hack it very quickly. There can be issues with the hardware wallet whatsoever. And that you don't get with multisig.
Yep.
Yeah, but the other side of this argument is the same that Josh, when you asked me what would you suggest for someone asking about backing up with Codex 32, there's at least when it gets more widespread, and right now it's not really supported anywhere. As the same as Frost, but it's more of a standardization thing because it's much simpler. It's a much simpler standard because it doesn't try to do as much as Frost. What I would say is to this person asking me is use single sig, and with Codex 32 and Shamir's, if it's widespread, you can actually get the benefit or a simplicity of a single sig, but you can have a backup that is split out. So you can get sort of if you're happy and satisfied with a single sig for simplicity reasons or whatever, then you can keep that, but you can also have this split out sharding of your seed when you back it up. So you kind of get some of the advantages of multisig, but you keep all of the properties, including the simplicity of the single sig.
I want to ask, this is kind of out of left field, but I'm just curious personally. So if there was a computer, like something very advanced, that could brute force a Bitcoin seed phrase or a private key, would that actually make it more, it would be more difficult to brute force a multisig because you have to brute force multiple keys, correct?
Yes and no.
I love that answer.
Yes, because of course there are two. Yes or no. So yes, because of course you have to guess two seeds. Brute force two seeds. But no, because it's not the same as brute forcing 24 words. If you have a two of three with 12 words each, mm-hmm. and you have a machine that can brute force 12 words, within, let's say, a year or something. And then two of these 12 words will probably not take you 2 years because you're going to have two machines.
Right. I see.
Whereas if you have 24 words seeds, just one single sig with 24 words, it's exponentially much, much harder to brute force 24 words than it is 12. So the two separate seeds, it's because those seeds are not dependent. You can guess them. You can brute force them independently. Whereas with the 24 words, you have to brute force all 24 words.
Okay.
So that's the no part of the answer.
So when you guys are creating your own multisigs, you're not using 12 words. You're using 24.
So personally, I think 12 words are enough. But that again, it's up to what people think and what makes you sleep well at night and so on.
Yeah, that's the other thing about it. Because, sorry to interrupt you, E, but 12 words already is so goddamn hard. Like, it's such a huge number. Anyways, I think the discussion about 12 and 24 words, like, do you want to make your seed one, I don't know if this is the right explanation, but one amongst a trillion billion seeds, or one that is exponentially higher, and it's just a decision. I think what's more important is to talk about how do you find your seed, because all seeds already exist today. You just need to select one, and how right. do you do that? Do you do it with 10 dice rolls, which will lead to a very low entropy, which might be surveilled already? Or will you do it in a way with many more dice rolls or some hardware that are helping you and so on and so forth? And we didn't discuss that about the Codex part. Because in Codex 32, you can, by hand, create your private key in a way where they have removed the bias from the dice. I don't know how it works exactly. E can explain it better, but that's really interesting to me because I like to make the seeds offline.
Wait, what do you mean by bias from the dice?
A dice can be, like, if it's not a casino-grade dice, it might tend to have six on top and one in the bottom because it's a little mm-hmm. bit heavier side.
I see what you're saying. So it's not...
Yeah, so the bias is just that a dice have a tendency to roll one... So the tendency is not to have completely 1/6 of a chance to roll any of the sides. If it has a bias, it's one of the sides, or more of one of the sides have a higher or lower chance of being rolled.
My loaded dice are not the dice to use.
So the point of Yeah. So, but what Dax is mentioning is that with Codex 30, you can do this with Proof 39 as well, but it's not a standardized way. With Codex 32 in their description, their manual, there's a method where you, even if you take loaded dice, you can use this method to generate an unbiased seed, which is pretty cool. You have to roll a lot more dice rolls, but again, maybe that's 10 minutes more per seed, which it shouldn't really matter if you were trying to store your life savings.
Has
on
got
it.
A,
and that's one thing.
They've got a little cylinder. I think I have it right here. Yeah, this little cylinder you can buy from CoinKite that has 100 dice in it. They're like a little tiny mini dice. And I've got to believe, I mean, I hope, we'll have to ask Rodolfo the next time I talk to him, but I would hope these are weighted correctly so that you get random. But I mean, that's a pretty convenient way to roll one time and get a shitload of randomness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, the problem with putting in inputting dice rolls into a device and getting a seed out is that you don't know whether this your dice rolls are being properly used as the source of the entropy for your seed. And that's a whole other, again, with Codex 32 and with some methods with BIP 39 seed phrases, there are methods where you can use dice rolls and completely offline manually verify that this dice roll corresponds to this word or this character in Codex 32. And in that way, be absolutely certain that what you rolled is what ends up in your seed.
Yeah. I think we're far.
That's probably a
I was going to say we're far afield of what most people are going to be doing here. I think. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I might fuck around with that, but that sounds like a what? How much time do you think it takes to create one seed with that method?
Not much longer than rolling 24 words.
No, okay.
I haven't done it, but one of the goals for us is actually, I love what you just said, because that's what we're going to try to crush. We want to put a UI, UX interface somehow with tools or something on top of these technologies so that it becomes accessible for people.
That's a great
so
idea.
So that it's understandable in layman terms, so you feel safe and secure when you do it, and it's going to be really, really easy to do. Without compromising the security, maybe even have higher security than we do today. And at the moment, we are looking at the backup parts, and we are trying to make it even easier and more accessible for the clips on a lot of points. But we are also thinking about how can we take the chain part before, like if we see it as a supply chain. We won't do anything on the exchange. People need to buy the coins. But as soon as they want to leave the exchange, we would like to help people hold their hands.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a really good high entropy offline made private key or multi-sig to put the coins on. And that's a problem. How do you make that even? And if we can crack the nut and provide a tool, kind of like what you just showed, some manual stuff or something like that, that can help people getting this totally unbiased. So you don't even have to think about calling Rodolfo, because you just know the mathematics plays out in a way that you don't have to trust anyone by pure mathematics. So you can use the worst dice where you ever had. And if you can build that in an accessible and cheap way for people, that where they can buy this kit totally trustless and they can end up after a quite, like, you can do a lot of things to the process so it goes faster, as long as you don't introduce anything you have to trust on. So it all is trusted by the mathematics, just like Bitcoin in general is. That's one of our goals, also to take that part. So you kind of get your really nice private seed made offline, very high entropy, without trusting anything. And then you back it up directly on steel, maybe. So you don't even have to load anything into any electronic device besides whatever is running the seed hammer. And then you are kind of backing up and creating your wallet in at the same time. That is kind of our goal, like long vision goal. I cannot tell you if we ever will reach it, but that's really something we are thinking about, because all this is too technical. It's just too much for the average person. but we need to put the security in the hands of the average person.
For sure. And this reminds me of, I'm sure you guys remember this back in the day, Trace Mayer was kind of a big name, like in 2017, around those, maybe, and before that as well. And he was always talking about Glacier Protocol, where you would get, I can't even remember off the top of my head, but I remember going to the website that he recommended, reading about it, and I was like, holy shit, you have to get, you know, find this specific kind of cheap laptop, make sure you drill out the Wi-Fi, all of the, you know, anything that can communicate with anything external, then, you know, get a notebook, get some dice, do all, I mean, it was like, I was just like, this is not doable for me. I don't even have enough money.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what you're describing here, which is you guys are trying to build this bridge between like make what's ultra nerdy, inaccessible to normal people accessible. And I think that's laudable. And that's exactly what we need to do.
It is what we need to do. And we have to remember when we use our credit card down in Tesco, we don't know anything about what's going on. Like, people don't question it. They just have a plastic card that works. They put it over a machine and then you have paid. They don't know everything about anything about the servers behind and blah, 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 blah.
Well, the one thing we do know is they know everything about you when you do it.
They know everything about you, yes. But with Bitcoin, people tend to come from the nerdy side, or if they're not nerdy, they have heard about this from nerds and you don't quite understand it. It's too good to be true, maybe. And what is those, like, you cannot see them? You cannot touch them. What is it? And that makes people question it. And when you're questioning it, you want to gain comfort by understanding. And some of this shit is just too hard to understand. Like, E can understand it. I can't. There's a lot of stuff where I'm like, okay, after you've broken this down, so I just understand 50% of it, my next question is, can we do like this and that? Which is really stupid and dumb, but it would be without losing any trust and any security and any entropy. And then we try to figure out how to do this so everyone can do it and they don't have to question it.
I love it. Guys, really appreciate your time joining me. You guys have anything else to drop before? I mean, obviously, if anyone's interested in getting a badass stamping machine that will create your backup seed phrases in steel beautifully, check out the Seed Hammer.
Yeah, thank you, man. We're trying to do our best.
Thank you very much.
I think we covered a lot of things. If you have a multi-sig, one thing maybe I would like to point out is if you're using one of those custody services that exist, Nunchuck is not a custody, but you also have some products and explicitly cash or Unchained and stuff like that, you're still in control of your multisig. You just have one share with the custody partner, but you still have your full descriptor somehow. At least they sent it to you in the beginning, I'm pretty sure.
They do. Yep.
You can still use the Seed Hammer because you would still like that the two shares you hold are on steel, and you would still like that you have your descriptor saved on steel. Because what if Casa implodes? What if something happens to the custody service? So it also makes it like, I know that there are Bitcoin consultancy companies using the Seed Hammer as a tool. So definitely if you also use some of those services, it can be a good investment to back up your own shares with the Seed Hammer.
Yep. And just make sure you get them in steel somehow. And this is the easiest way that I've seen.
Yeah. I think with the descriptor part, it's the only way. But correct me
absolutely
if I'm wrong.
Yes. No, it's the only way I'm aware of.
So yeah, that's pretty much it. And then we are just trying to work as much as we can on making everything more simple, more accessible on all aspects of this machine.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Beautiful work you guys are doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you very much.
You too.
Thanks again for joining us. Please leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. It greatly helps the show. If you haven't checked out Fountain yet for your podcast solution, you should. You can get paid sats to listen to your favorite show. Again, thank you for joining us. See you next time. We'll be right back.
Bye.